This is from Mark's Gospel, chapter 12. And he sat down opposite the treasury and watched the multitude putting money into the treasury. Many rich people put in large sums, and a poor widow came and put in 2 copper coins, which make a penny. And he called his disciples to him and said to them, "Truly I say to you, this poor widow has put in more than all those who are contributing to the treasury. For they all contributed out of their abundance, but she, out of her poverty, has put in everything she had, her whole being." We had the classic piano radio station on the other night during dinner. And, you don't fully pay attention to everything, but the music suddenly cut into my consciousness because I recognized the tune immediately. It was Clair de Lune by Claude Debussy. And what I didn't expect after recognizing the song was for my memory to take an immediate leap back almost 30 years to a place I hadn't thought of in a while and to a person I hadn't thought of in probably all that time. The place was the little Presbyterian church in Fountain Green, Illinois, population 89, I'm not kidding, where I sort of learned the value of and how to do this kind of ministry. The town had 2 commercial enterprises in it, the Presbyterian church and an auto salvage yard. And in that town, they had 4 or 5 people that knew how to play the piano at all. And one of them, who sort of knew how to play it, was the musician in this church. And on Easter Sunday, in either 1988 or 89, it had to be one of those two, for the offertory, instead of working her way through a hymn or two, she played Clair de Lune for Easter. And after the service, I went up and I said, "That was beautiful." And she said, "Well, no, it wasn't really. It's not the hard edition of that. But I worked a couple months because I wanted to do that for Easter." And I thought, what a deceptively simple gift with an enormous amount of heart behind it. I remembered Clair de Lune immediately. I'm sorry to say I have no idea what this woman's name is. I don't remember that. But I remember the feeling of sort of being in the presence of someone who gave something remarkable for that one moment. And you should know that an offertory is not just cover music to pick up the money. It's the musician's gift out of whatever he or she has on that particular day. And so that gift is something to be treasured. And this particular gift on Easter Sunday, with an unusual amount of heart behind it, was deceptively simple, Clair de Lune. And I've been thinking about that. I think the best gifts that we all receive, and that in some sense we all give back, are deceptively simple. And to get in touch with the power of that and the heart that goes into it, I think you first have to do what I call an assessment, or kind of a cost-benefit analysis of what gifts and things are. So I did that this week. I had to take this out of a plastic, or out of a glass case, actually. It's a baseball card. It's a baseball card that originally was in somebody's cigarette pack in 1909. And it comes out of that era, and it's a picture of Ty Cobb, who was the first baseball player inducted into the Hall of Fame. And I've had this for, 6 or 7 years, eBay, of course. And I learned just yesterday that if I were to put this back on eBay and sell it, I could probably get $1,500 for it, which is sort of stunning. This tiny little piece of cardboard costs $1,500. And I thought, well, that's intriguing. And then in my car, I discovered this as well. This is a drawing of a tree frog that says on the back, "To Grandma and Papa from Lily." She drew us this a couple years ago when she was 5, after we had taken her to dinner at the Rainforest Cafe in San Antonio on the Riverwalk. And I've had it in my car ever since. And I'm thinking to myself, of what value would I ascribe to each of these two things? And we used to in college do values clarification exercises, and one of them was called burning building. And the question is, what if you had 20 seconds to run back into your burning house, would you come out with? You know? And of course, no one would be quite that stupid in practical terms, but there's no question. If I could pick one of these two things and one of these two things only out of a burning house, that's it. And if you think about it, would you not agree that the most precious, even things you own, the most precious things you own are probably not the most expensive things you own? There's a difference between cost and value. And I think that's what gets us started on a discussion of, or even a bit of reflection on, what I call deceptively simple gifts. Clair de Lune, the drawing of a child who will never be five again. I was thinking about the deceptively simple gift of an idea. In my other life at Texas Tech, I still believe I'm in the idea business, although I don't know that administrators would always agree. We're in the student credit hour business, but none of that. I believe I'm in the idea business of putting thoughts together in ways that maybe students haven't thought about in quite that way before. And they get these little aha moments. And every once in a while, I get feedback to the effect that that actually happens from time to time. But for this morning, I had an aha kind of a moment about something in a new way that I talk about all the time. In fact, you know, in preparing to do this work each Sunday, I usually have some notion of what I want to do mid-week, Wednesday, Thursday, sometimes not till Saturday afternoon. And since I've been doing this for a long time, if I don't have anything going till Saturday afternoon, in my head I go, when in doubt, talk about prayer. Not because I'm especially adept at it or I'm particularly theologically deep in my own thinking about it, but prayer plays well. I know that. Well, this Sunday, in just this little segment of this conversation, I want to talk about prayer in a different way. I want to talk about prayer as a thought, prayer as an idea. And it builds on something that I've talked about many times before out of an essay of which I'm fairly familiar and very fond, where the essayist says, you know, a prayer that is a prayer of confession doesn't tell God anything God doesn't already know. God is all-knowing. But until that prayer is confessed, there's a gap between you and God. Once the confession occurs, the gap becomes the bridge, and that's the idea. The gap becomes the bridge. Prayer as a thought, as a bridge. Not a new thought, except in this new way. For me personally, this week. As you well know, this has been kind of a lousy year so far. Jeannie gets cancer for Christmas. And the dealing with that has been rigorous and difficult, and it gets worse before it gets better. And in the midst of feeling helpless and angry and terrified by this whole deal, for some reason or another, within the last week or so, the thought went through my mind, someone prayed for her today. Someone prayed for us today. Now, I don't know who it was, I don't know when it was, I don't know what was said, but I've been told often enough by so many people that you're in our prayers that I can confidently assume on any day, someone did. And I can't begin to tell you how calming that thought was when it first hit me just a few days ago. And how much I rely on that, and she does as well. The bridge, the thought bridge, the prayer that connects us in ways that don't fully replace, but put next to the anger and the helplessness and the terror, some hope, and even some love. The thought, someone prayed for her today, is the bridge to whatever comes next. So a piece of music, a memory, a thought, a prayer, it all comes down to the moments of our lives in some ways. because every deceptively simple gift is really only a moment in time. If you were here last week, you know we had the kids from Austin and the grandkids with us, and the two-year-old, Josh, who's very close in age to Bella. And it's just a hoot and a half most of the time, especially when you're the grandparent. But anyway, later last Sunday, after we got home from church, Josh found the squirt bottle that we use to discipline the cats. And what fun a two-year-old has with a squirt bottle, right? So he first discovered that if you pointed at yourself and pushed the trigger, you'd get squirted. And he thought that's just the funniest thing. And it's just having a big old time squirting himself. And that was great. We were having a big time watching him do that. And then he soon discovered that when you're done having fun squirting yourself, it's even more fun to squirt somebody else. And so he's running around the house and running around the yard, squirting everybody. And we're all being real good sports about it. Even me, for a little while. And then I'm a little more standoffish, and I'm kind of watching this from afar a little bit. And having fun. And later in the evening, Jeannie and I were talking, and she goes, you know, you kind of backed off from that big fun we were having with Josh. And I said, I don't like to get squirted. And she looked at me like, oh, you poor man. And she said, nobody likes to get squirted. But did you watch what he did every single time? The belly laugh of a two-year-old that is irreplaceable? Yeah. And it's like, duh, okay. The moment is this amazingly and deceptively priceless gift, because I'm not going to see him for a month or two. And when you're two and 6 weeks pass, that's a fairly significant percentage of your life. And they can't be over the squirt bottle, probably. Well, maybe not. But he'll be over, he'll be in a new deal, right? And the moment will be different. And all I have now of the moment is the memory, which, lucky for me, is enough, because these deceptively simple gifts that occur to us in moments in time do stay with us as memories, and those memories motivate, I think, to pass on and share and to deliver in our own way deceptively simple gifts. We receive them and they pass through us, and then they move out and beyond us in ways that I think sometimes only occur to us in the moment. And it's here where I take this story of the widow's mite, is what it's called, this woman who gave out of her poverty what Jesus calls her whole being, and I put it next to another story that occurs in the New Testament in all four Gospels, and it's actually the only story in the New Testament of Jesus' life that is in all four Gospels. It's called the multiplication of loaves, where Jesus feeds 5,000 people out of a couple of loaves and two fish. And the widow's mite plus the multiplication of loaves begs a fascinating and rhetorical and extraordinarily hopeful question. What do you imagine God could do with a deceptively simple gift? A song played out of love and devotion. A prayer connecting two people. A moment in time with a two-year-old or anyone who loves you. What can God do with a deceptively simple gift that comes from someone's whole being? Well, if he can feed 5,000 with a couple of loaves and two fish, he can take a deceptively simple gift and do with it anything and everything. Amen.